Welcome to the Wasting Time podcast. I'm Chris. I'm here with Nick. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Chris. We've got someone else here as well, haven't we?
We have.
We are joined by Mr. Bobby Grohl, aka first-time drummer Rob Bray. Robin Bray.
From the famous Elvana. What's up, Rob?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Yeah, good, good. It's we often reference Elvana on this show, so it's a pleasure to have you as a little guest on this intro segment.
Thanks. Chris says this of his own free will. You're not a paid shill, now are you, Chris?
I do feel like there is some bitterness from Rob that he hasn't had an actual proper invite on the podcast, though.
Well, I would say that, Nick, but why the fuck haven't you, Chris? Why haven't you?
Yeah, it's true. Well, you're just too big time these days. So
no, I feel like, you know, even though it's not pop punk, it goes against like the podcast. We'd slip in there. We're quite tongue in cheek, so we'd slip in there, and I think, you know, we'd go unnoticed.
On this episode today, I actually mention Elvana at the very end and have a little discussion about you guys, as the listeners will hear later on. And this guest was very familiar with you, so
nice.
You do get mentioned. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Excellent. I might check that one out then.
Yeah.
2,000 Trees isn't on your festival run then?
No, unfortunately not. Hopefully you guys can get us in there, though.
It's a bit too maybe like alternative.
Yeah, sounds it. But we'll get us on the podcast first, and then we'll talk about you getting us into festivals in the US.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds good.
But you're on tour right now. You're in Bristol.
Bristol at the minute, yeah. The last four dates of the tour, and then we're done. Got Bristol, Wrexham, Leeds, then Newcastle, then we've got a couple of weeks off, then back to Europe. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, I'm in the Northeast just after your Newcastle show, so I'm sorry to miss that. Yeah, it's unfortunate timing. And also, I see Darius Rucker is playing the same venue as you the next day, and that's you know you've hit the big time. So I would have loved a 1-2 of Elvana followed by Darius Rucker, but sadly it wasn't to be.
Next it'll be Kevin from American Pie playing in the same venue, you know?
What's his band called?
I don't know, but he did a little acoustic tour, because I've seen his posters all over the Germany venues.
Yeah. Yeah, he really goes with it on the Europe thing. It's called the Thomas Nicholas Band, I think. They're on Spam Records, the same. You know what, Nick, what Tony Lovato was talking about, the European context, the same one. He kind of grinds away for sure.
So tour's going all right, Rob?
Yeah, going well, man. Yeah, I think we're sort of ready for a break now. But it's been good. It's been good. Textbook, you know, don't want to sound ungrateful, but crowds have been good. Just awesome. Big party night out band. So yeah, it's all going well.
Yeah. I haven't seen you guys. I saw you guys play three times last year, I think it was, and I haven't had my 2024 Elvana fix yet. So
you haven't, have you? No, God, yeah, you're on that one. Be Bristol the next time, I guess, wouldn't it?
Congratulations on that, by the way. I haven't spoken to you since that was announced. So how are you feeling about that?
Yeah, good. Yeah, no, it's I think it's just getting tested out now with a couple of bands. I think UK Foo Fighters are playing it, and there's a UK Nirvana band that's playing it as well, actually.
I saw that.
A big competition there. So, I think they're just testing the entire room out to see how it sounds, you know? Then they're going to start putting the proper bands on after that, you know?
Yeah. Make sure they're watertight from insurance claims.
I think so, yeah.
Definitely.
And then you've got festival season coming up after Europe as well. You got much?
We're going to take it easy on the festivals this year. I think we did about 24 last year. We did too many.
Wow.
Jesus.
So I think this year we're just going to limit it to 10. Just have a bit of a quiet year. Yeah.
Downloads in the mixer again.
Yeah, download again. Yeah, so that'll be
nice.
Cool. Well, I guess this was a little bit unplanned. So like, I don't know if you even want to talk about new releases that Rob's probably never heard of.
That Rob's never heard of. Well, I do, but let's keep it real brief. Because we didn't do any last time, but I promise Rob, we will keep this brief. Firstly, first thing I wanted to talk about that I noticed today. So Taylor Swift's got a new album out at the time of recording. One of the songs, she references the starting line in the chorus. I thought that was...
All right, that's cool.
That's all your thoughts on that? That's it?
I've heard of the starting line.
Yeah.
So Nick thinks that's cool. Rob says, I've heard of the starting line. Okay, that's cool. But I just thought an old drive-through band being referenced biggest pop star in the world right now. That's something.
It's good timing as well, right? Because, you know, that whole homegrown announcements just come out last week, and they're doing gigs with Starting Line
to kind of reintroduce
themselves after what, like 19 years or something. So there you go. All kind of circles around as a single talking point.
Yeah. And real quick, what have you both been listening to recently?
Go on, Rob, you go.
Eldona. To be honest with you, yeah, that's all I hear in my ears at the minute. Elvis and Nirvana. We're either learning an Elvis song and trying to mash it up with a Nirvana song.
Yeah.
Or we're listening to recordings of previous gigs and seeing what we can release. So yeah, it's a bit boring on my end, I'm afraid.
Dedicated though. Very dedicated.
What about you guys?
You probably share this, Chris, but that new Military Gun album, like that record is really kind of been one for me that's like stuck over the last couple of weeks since we've been delving into them a little bit. Not too bothered about their like older stuff that I've kind of listened to, but then that new record is Life Under the Gun, I think it's called.
Life Under the Gun, yeah. It's a very cool sound.
You might like it, Rob, actually, because it's kind of like it's not like pop punk. It's like a kind of grittier, well, I like to call it a grittier kind of version of Weezer. So it's kind of got kind of chuggy, kind of rocky kind of sound, but with a bit of grit to it, bit of like
dirty Weezer.
Yeah.
Nice. So, yeah, I'll check it out.
You might actually like it. Anything else from you, Chris?
Yeah, aside from Military Gun, been enjoying that new Mest song, which obviously we talked about with Tony Lovato last time. That's kind of it's what I want from a Mest song. It's like the kind of melody that would be on Destination Unknown, so I am enjoying that. Listen to it loads. New song by Super American called Hopefully Pitchfork Doesn't Hear This. That's pretty cool. But yeah, apart from that, Military Gun. So yeah, that's kind of
I haven't given much time to the Sum 41 release. I know you have a little bit, but
yeah, that's kind of.
I still need to dip into that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's cool. I don't know how it stacks up against their other stuff. Definitely, Dopamine is the standout song for me.
I've heard that one. All right. Anything else? Anything else of note?
I'm just looking at a set list from a band that played here last night.
Go on. Yeah.
Well, you know. Any of these rings, you know, that could be a competition. Guess the band and win something. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. Nick, do you recognize any of those songs?
Avalanche in my head.
This is quite a short set, so this could be a support for the main.
Could be a support band, couldn't it?
Yeah. Well,
it's not Lovebreak, because I know that.
I'm
quite familiar with their support set.
Let me see
what's the most distinctive name there? Susie May. I'm gonna search that on Spotify. Yeah. Susie May.
Caravan Palette. There's nothing called.
No, there's an artist called that, but there's nothing coming up.
So if you're listening out there and this is your band, get in touch.
There's a band called Cosheen, but I don't think, it's them. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. That's.
I'm going to find out. I'll let you know. I'm going to solve this mystery.
Okay. On that note, let me introduce today's guest. So I spoke to James Scarlett, who essentially runs 2000 Trees, which is a huge festival, huge alternative festival here in the UK. He does that festival along with Arc Tangent, which is more of a metal festival. And I spoke to him a few weeks ago and it was a great chat. So here it is. Thank you for being here firstly and introducing yourself. Yeah. So I'm Chris. I'm one of the hosts of the Wasting Time podcast. The one that was unfortunately the only one that was available at this time today, but you know, or you've got the best one. What can I say? You know?
Absolutely.
Which is up for debate.
I'm sure it's true.
But no, I really appreciate you giving us some of your time, and I'm very keen to have a conversation with you. Whereabouts are you based, James?
Based in Bristol.
How long have you lived there for?
10 years, maybe. So I was brought up in the countryside, but I lived all of my adult life in either London or Bristol. So about 10 years in both. So yeah.
Two good places to do that. I know Bristol very well. Like my sister lives there still. So I go there quite often.
Yeah. It's good for, you know, music and culture and, you know, if you like going to gigs or whatever, it's the place to be, I think.
Yeah, it's almost like a bigger Brighton, almost, with the kind of vibe it has.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah, so we just touched upon your podcast. I kind of wanted to talk about that at the top because I could see it's a comparatively recent thing. You just mentioned, I think, you've been doing it for 2 months now. You and a fellow festival promoter, like, how's the experience been, and how's that been received?
I mean, it's gone really well. I'll be honest, I was quite scared. It's called Two Promoters, One Pod, and we're basically talking about what it's like being a promoter, like our actual jobs. Yeah. So there's a bit of us like giving our opinion on music or some popular news story that's in the rock world, but it's a lot of us like talking about stuff that is behind the scenes, like how you book bands or how a festival poster comes together. And I don't think we really knew if people would be interested or not. And it turns out people are super interested, and the downloads are going up every week. And
oh, amazing.
It helps that we've got like a sort of captive audience there with Gav runs Damnation Festival, and I obviously run 2000 Trees and Arctangent. So yeah, it's cool. I mean, it's a different, really different type of sort of work for me. It's like really putting yourself out there. I find being interviewed quite a natural thing because you're basically just talking about what you do every day. I don't find interviews like scary, but running your own podcast where you're actually in charge of what gets said next is a totally different experience. And I found it quite daunting at the start. So yeah.
Yeah. It's very different kettle of fish for sure. I wonder if like you're growing an audience because I feel like you're both quite candid on it. And like, that's really interesting from an outside perspective, you know, candid without being, you know, naming names or whatever. Like you do give like a genuine insight into what it's like, you know. I think that's kind of, that could be part of the appeal.
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to be as honest as we can without like getting in big trouble with some of the rest of the music industry for telling,
of course,
secrets about how much we paid for bands or whatever. But so it is, it's very honest. And me and Gav know each other fairly well, and whenever we're at a festival together or in the pub or whatever, we have some good chats about the music industry. The only thing that's different is we've like just turned a camera and a microphone on, and we're just still just talking. So
yeah,
there's not like a massive plan each episode. We just have a topic and we go for it. And it so far so good, I think.
Nice. So before like we get into the details of your two festivals, I mean, but I'll probably focus a little more on 2000 Trees for the purpose of our audience, because I feel like, you know, I want to hear about both of them, but I think the kind of artists we covered like definitely falls more into the 2000 Trees bracket. Yeah,
sure.
But yeah, just tell me a little bit about your background first, like how you kind of got into music promotion. How long have you been in that world for, and what were you doing before that?
My introduction to the industry is a bit random. I basically started as I had nothing to do with music industry. I had like a proper businessy job in London in a suit, clean shaven in a suit. And did that for a long time, like 10 years. And halfway through that period, I just was really hating my job and my life, I think. And me and my friends got drunk one time at Reading Festival and just hatched a plan to do something better than the experience we were getting at Reading. It was about doing something smaller and more intimate. I used to love the lineups at Reading. They used to do the best rock lineups, I thought. And but the experience wasn't great. The toilets and the food and you know, the campsite.
Yeah.
So we wanted to just basically do something better. We were pretty naive because we had no experience. None of us were in the music industry. None of us even really were friends with bands. I mean, I was in bands. My brother, who's one of the 2000 Trees organizer, was in a band with me, but not a serious band. It's just like a hobby.
In the London scene at that point, if you were living in London?
Yeah, but you're not, I'm not claiming some like being part of some scene. We used to play at like the Hope and Anchor and the Bull and Gate in London. I used to absolutely love it. But, you know, we did a couple of EPs and it was just like, it was a hobby though. We were playing at it and it was great fun. I was never, I think because I was brought up in a village, it never really occurred to me that you would be in a band and the band would be a band that people would listen to. It's just like, I'm going to write the songs I want to write and have some fun. So that was our only tiny touch of the music industry, but it doesn't seem to really count for me. And so when we got into 2000, we just went for it with 2000 Trees. It was very much a like, we're going to work this out as we go along. Can we run a music festival? Let's just work it out.
And you say a group of friends, how many of you were there?
Six of us. So
there's
still the same six involved, although some have got full-time jobs and some of us are full-time on the festivals. But yeah, it's basically my six, it's my brother and four friends and me, and the friends were from school or university. And we're a really tight group. And we were either clever or stupid enough to think that we could actually pull it off. So we just went for it.
That's amazing. I love that it's the same six of you like involved to one degree or another. That's awesome.
Yeah. And we still, you know, every year at 2000 Trees, we still like the radio call goes out. Shall we all meet for a beer in front of the main stage? You know, there'll be a band on that's got like a history with a festival, like a Frank Turner or something like that. And we'll be like, should we go watch Frank Turner together and have a beer? And it's like same six people, 17 years. So it's 17 years later.
This will be the 17th one.
Well, apart from COVID and all that. But
of course. Of course. So 2007, I guess, would have been the first one. So from that kind of initial idea of like, okay, we're going to give this a go, let's see what happens. Like, how long was that period before the actual first 2007?
So we were at Reading in August 2006, and that was the first drunken conversation. So that is not like, at that point, not only do you not know anything about running festivals, you also don't have a place to have the festival. You don't know how you'd even go about speaking to a farmer or booking bands or anything. So between August 2006 and July 2007,
yes,
we pulled it all together. We got, I don't know, we sold about 1,000 tickets in that first year, which felt all right. Nowadays, that would feel like not good, but it was what it was, and we went for it. So yeah, quick. It was a bit of a mad time because we all had full-time jobs. It wasn't like we quit our jobs. We didn't quit our jobs for about another 4 or 5 years.
Right. Okay.
So my boss was totally unaware that I was running music festivals on the side.
And what was the experience of the actual that first year like? Was it really stressful? I assume it must have been stressful to some degree, but was it just like, oh, this is amazing, we're doing this, I'm all in straight away? Or
it's a bit like a deer in the headlights or whatever. There was so much going on. And none of it you could really predict exactly how it would run. And because we had no experience, all the things that I get asked to go and speak to university students nowadays about how you run a festival. And like 17 years later, I do know the answer to that question.
Okay.
I didn't know the answer to that question 17 years ago. And
that
means that the first time you do it is bonkers because you've forgotten the important stuff that you should have done, or you didn't forget it. You just never knew it. And we just bumbled our way through it. We trained to be security guards to save money, so we had very very low security because we were also doing the security. Didn't really know much about like running stages and production for artists, and although it wasn't like we were booking Metallica, we still had like Frank Turner, In Me, and a bunch of other like rock bands that had been around for a long time and knew what a proper gig should look like. So the first year was mad. There were tears, there was like extreme stress. And I think when we got to the end of it, we were all just like, I can't believe it. I can't believe it happened. We only lost a little bit of money. We're gonna go again. And really it wasn't till 3 or 4 years into running 2000 Trees where we were properly like, okay, we're getting good at this now. We know what we're doing, because it's a super odd job, because most jobs, like you would do a podcast this week and then next week you'd think, I didn't like how I did that. I'm going to do it differently next week. Sure. Whereas with a festival, it's in a year's time.
Yeah.
So if you made a cock up on the bar or the stages, you've got to somehow transfer that knowledge in your brain a year into the future and not repeat your mistakes. And that still is a hard part of the job we do, because you have a whole year off between events.
I suppose that would be an easy trap to fall into, because it's such a long time that when it rolls around again, you might be like, oh, do you know what, that'll be fine actually.
Yeah, well, there's a bunch of stuff that goes on in like festival setup, where festival setup is all about getting the order of things right, and things like staging and fencing and barriers and marquees and lighting and power and water. There's loads of stuff that goes into the setup of the festival and the order of it, and what bits create stress. And it's very easy to be stood in a field a year later, like hitting yourself on the head going, oh, we did this. We made this mistake last year and we've made it again. so yeah, it's a weird job like that.
Yeah. Are there any mistakes that jump out in your memory that took you a couple of years to kind of eventually learn your lesson?
Well, I mean, there's one we have every year at ArcTangent, because ArcTangent's quite windy. Oh, yeah. Okay. So the fencing blows over. So basically, there's a type of fencing called Harris fencing, which is that kind of mesh fencing that you see on building sites. And to make it look nice, you put banners on it. Yeah. And well, the plan is don't put banners on it at ArcTangent, because it creates like a sail. And this the fencing actually goes up into the air. It's remakable to see. You can get ideal, like 40 though. Or 50 meters of fencing flying through the air. So yeah, that's like an annual. Didn't we agree not to do banners this year?
And speaking of that festival, so what you can't, is it, that's just over 10 years old now, right?
Yeah. So this is our 10th anniversary this August coming.
Got it.
Yeah. And I think we were, the reason 2000 Trees is great and popular is because of its community, and it isn't a massive festival, and you can, it's just such a nice place to be. And we didn't want to ruin that by getting bigger, but a couple of us sort of wanted to do more and get out of our horrible day jobs. So we started another festival basically, which is like originally it's kind of a sister festival to 2000 Trees, but they are very, very different. They feel different and they sound different. Not many bands. There are some bands in the middle that would play both festivals.
Like I see that.
Arcane Roots, Black Peaks, and So Much From Afar, Jamie Lenman, all those sort of acts would play both. But you would never see Jimmy Eat World at ArcTangent, and you would probably not see Mogwai or Meshuggah at 2000 Trees. So they're different. I mean, that festival was way easier to start, although it's still difficult to start a new event, very difficult. But we knew what we were doing. That was 2013. And, you know, we were 6 years into it then at that point.
And was that the time that you kind of transitioned into it being a full-time thing for you then?
Yeah, so in 2012, me and Simon, who is one of the organisers of 2000 Trees and ArcTangent, like me, we both quit our jobs. So we both had you get those jobs where your parents are proud of you? It was that sort of job we had. They weren't that happy, even though we were in our, like, early 30s.
Yeah.
You're never too old to have your parents telling you what the hell are you doing.
Absolutely.
So, you know, all the like work that we put in to qualify in our careers, we just ditched and just went into music festivals. And to be honest, it's the best decision I ever made in terms of, not in terms of my bank balance maybe always, but in terms of my quality of life, best thing I've ever done.
Exactly. So, and kind of just living, breathing music to a degree as well, you know?
Yeah. It's a big step and It feels good. I'm glad we did it.
Yeah, so this podcast did press at 2000 Trees last year, which was a fantastic experience. I my co-host that I went with prior to speaking to you today, I was just like, oh, anything you want me to add in? And he did mention, and it's interesting because it kind of ties in with something you said at the top of this, because you were talking about the idea for starting your own festival being like some of the negative things at Reading Festival. And he's just said, oh, can you ask him how he's adopted a really pleasant environment? Because he was like, being at the festival last year, didn't see one bit of antisocial behavior, virtually no litter. It was about as to quote Greg O'Grady, it's about as pleasant as a festival could get.
Amazing.
Obviously that's a nice endorsement for the festival.
Yeah.
How do you think that's kind of come into place? Like, because obviously that's what you wanted to achieve. And, you know, judging by this, you have, you know.
I think it's about community. And I think we can only take part of the credit for that, because I think the people that come to the festival should take the credit. And so should the artists that play at the festival. And so should the staff that work there. So somehow, in some ways, it wasn't designed. It was just something that happened. It's a beautiful place, 2000 Trees. It's usually sunny.
Yep.
It's a small site. We are we are all the organisers are keen festival goers, so we know the things that annoy festival goers, like there's no toilet roll, or it's a long walk between stages, or yeah. I don't know, there's no trackway in the car park. We understand all the gripes that people have because we have had them at other events. And so we've been very focused on making it a nice place to be, but we can only do so much. And then ultimately, it's the customers that come and act like they're not dickheads. They're just nice people. And it's the artists that walk around site, you know, like Frank Turner and sort of Benji from Skindred and, you know, a million other artists over the years, Alkaline Trio, just go out the front. You don't go out the front at Download, do you? You get mobbed if you go out the front of Download, if you're one of the artists. Sure. But at 2000 Trees, they just go for a walk and the fans say hi to them and they have a selfie. And, you know, it's just the community. And really, I would give the number one credit to our staff because they're just amazing. And we're really focused on, you know, when you see the first security guard or the first car park steward, that they're smiling at you. And the artist liaison team are amazing. The production team are amazing. So I think everyone buys the ethos of the event, which is that it's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be nice, supposed to be smiling. It doesn't matter if like it's the heaviest, most horrible band.
Yeah.
There's a mosh pit. It can still be fun, can't it? It doesn't have to be scary and like aggressive.
In a
bad way. It's just a positive vibe all around, I think.
I agree. And that was my experience as well. It was just a really nice place to be. And I really enjoyed the Wednesday night as well, like that kind of opening night that you guys have. I think that's a really nice touch, you know.
Yeah, it's my favourite.
Good vibes then.
Yeah. You know? I really love it. It's my favourite night because I get quite like fear of missing out, really. So I'm like running around the festival trying to see everything. I want to see the campsite. I want to see people enjoying themselves in the campsite, but I want to see every band and I want to go to every bar and talk to my friends and talk to the music industry and like do interviews, and there's not enough time. So the Wednesday's great because it's just like two stages, walk back and forwards between them, have a beer, chat to your mates. You can always find people. You haven't like lost everyone. It's a super, super nice vibe. And it's going to be good this year. I think I'm really happy with the Wednesday lineup.
Who have we got?
Boston Manor headline in the forest.
Nice.
And we've got a new thing happening at Trees this year where after 11 p.m., there's going to be live band silent disco. So you will have your silent disco headphones on, but for the first couple of acts in the forest, you will be watching an actual band playing, but it's kept with it. Noise is coming through the headphones. So we have done it ArcTangent. It does work. So on that Wednesday night, Cody Frost is going to be like the first act to have done that. But then we've got a bunch of others coming. So that'll be cool. Yeah.
It's a really strong lineup. Not that it isn't usually. Who are you like really excited to see in particular this year?
Well, I mean, Manchester Orchestra is a band that I've been trying to book for literally ever. They're just so amazing. And if you go and watch a YouTube video of Manchester Orchestra, or just wait for Trees, but his voice is just so unbelievable. I mean, and he can do it live as well.
Real quick on them, because they've been around forever and they're just one of those bands that for me personally, I've just never really taken the moment to listen to. And I was just like, oh, someone was banging on about them the other day and I must give them a listen. And I just realized it's your mate from your podcast. It was listening to that, I think, we're at the end when you're doing your recommendations.
Yeah, he'll be happy about it. Gav's a big Manchester Orchestra fan. They're really great, really great band. I would recommend anyone check them out. They're kind of like the sort of band that would appeal to a very broad range. So yeah, that'll be great. I'm really excited about a band called Unpeople who are...
on the Thursday, I see. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and it's the new band from Prestonico. So they were previously Prestonico.
Oh, is it? Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Now they're Unpeople. There's a couple of songs out and they are absolute bangers. I've got a sneaking suspicion that this band are going to get really popular. You never really know with bands, so we'll see. But I have this sneaking suspicion that this band could go somewhere.
I'll keep an eye out for that. There's no set rule. Like a band could have all the ingredients and then for whatever reason they don't. But okay, good tip. I'll watch out for them.
Yeah, they're really great. But yeah, I mean, I think the lineup is a really strong one for us this year. We've got some pretty cool stuff happening in the Forest. I mean, that's my favorite stage of 2000 Trees because it's like, it's just something different. It's like, you can't get this anywhere else, really. It's like, you don't see a stage like that at Download or Reading or Slam Dunk.
That's true. Yeah.
And you get some really special sets in there. So, yeah, there's going to be some cool stuff. I don't know if you know the band Los Campesinos. They're like a sort of indie rock band from, I don't know, 10 years ago. They played Trees way back, and they were really keen to come back this year. So I think that'll be cool in the Forest. And, yeah, there's a bunch of amazing stuff. And I'm also currently working on some of the bigger acts to do acoustic sets in there. So, yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's not announced
yet. That'll be fun.
Yeah, okay. There's going to be some good ones.
Okay, watch this space. Awesome. You kind of touched on this before, but like, obviously, you know, running a festival like 2000 Trees has got to be amazing. But then at the same time, you're saying, you know, when it happens, you know, you want to be everywhere and stuff. What are some of like the more negative sides of running a festival like that? What are like some of your biggest headaches that, you know? Obviously, any job comes with that, but what are the big downsides for running a big festival?
I mean, so we've got a really great team now, which we didn't used to have. So we used to do loads of stuff ourselves. Whereas now, that when the festival's actually live, there is a really brilliant team in place. So like there's a couple of people who work for me. Sarah runs the arts liaison and Ollie runs the production. And basically, if something breaks, Ollie deals with it. And if a band are being a nightmare, which they will be, Sarah deals with it. And those were my two main stresses. And I know those people are brilliant. And to be honest, the only thing that I now worry about is the unknown stuff that happened. So last year at 2000 Trees, I was with my 5-year-old son and we were watching a band together. And I was aware that outside the tent, it was absolutely pouring with rain. And I got a radio call saying, there's a lightning storm coming and we need you to come urgently to event control. So I was like, chuck my son in the buggy, zoomed back to my caravan to throw my son in there with my wife. And it was basically like, I've got to go straight to event control. And they were like watching a radar screen of, you can actually see the lightning strikes hitting. And if they come closer than 6 miles to the festival, you have to close the stages and get everyone to go back to their campsite. So I don't think I've ever talked about this before. The punters don't know this happened. I mean, obviously they saw the lightning. They didn't realize how close they were to us shutting the stages down. So that night we had Deaf Havana into 100 Reasons into Frank Carter and the Rattlesnakes on the main stage. Yeah. And when that rain was happening, we were in deep shit and I was not watching bands. I was in event control, staring at a radar. And that... Well, as a way of snapping you out of your really blissful, isn't it great being a festival organizer? It's quite
that'll do it.
Yeah, it's quite an adrenaline because you're like, right, oh, we've got to get 15,000 people out of the stages into their tents. And then when the lightning storm passes, we've got to get them back out again to watch Frank Carter and the Rattlesnakes. So that's not fun. And no festival, there is no plan you can make against lightning. If the lightning comes, if you're Glastonbury, Reading, Download, you're all doing the same thing. Evacuate, basically.
Yeah. You have no control over that. Yeah.
So those things, wind is another one. We've had some really windy years at Arctangent. Above 50 mile an hour winds, you're in deep shit as a festival. So those things are the bad side because you can't do anything about them.
Yeah.
Literally nothing you can do about wind. You're on the hook for some... Basically, if you have to cancel and everything's there, the punters will want their money back. The bands will still want to be paid. I mean, it's just a proper nightmare. And like with lightning, at least lightning comes and goes. But wind doesn't necessarily. You might have 3 days of... It would have to be unseasonable wind. I mean, very unusual, but it's possible. There are festivals that have been cancelled by wind.
Have you ever had to cancel on the day throughout these years for anything?
No, so the... No, and we've never really got close, if I'm honest. The closest we ever got was in 2012 at 2000 Trees when it had rained for a month, basically. When we got to the site to set it up, it was a quagmire. By the time we'd set it up, it was muddy. By the time there was a day's worth of 10,000 people, it was liquid mud, sort of like 2 feet deep. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I've literally never been to a muddier festival than that 2000 Trees. And we were sitting in the sort of site office at 4 a.m. just being like, what are we going to do here? Like the car park's flooded. and like the answer is, we got the show, as cheesy as it sounds, the show must go on. It has to go on. The show has to go on. Because the other option is too catastrophic to think about. So
fair enough.
Again, I'm a big believer in you can get past rain. You can't get past wind and lightning, but rain, just dig in and get on with it. It'll be fine.
Yeah, well, you know, you're running festivals in Britain, so you know you've got to have that attitude, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, these two festivals will take up, you know, I assume a big part of your year, like planning. I assume like planning into the next year's probably starts pretty soon as the current one finishes. But do you, outside of the festival stuff, do you manage bands as well?
I did quite a long time ago. I managed bands. Okay. I managed, a couple of Jim Lockie and the Solemn Sun and the Cabri Sisters were the main ones. They both played 2000 Trees a bunch, needless to say. Band management was not really for me. I do a lot of promoting in Bristol with Miles from Effigy. So we've got a bunch of shows coming up. We do, you know, bands like Bob Villain and Thrice and Code and Cambria, You Me at Six. We've done a lot of gig promoting, like that we do their Bristol show. We do a few shows in Cardiff and some in London as well. Not much in London, but a little bit. This really, festivals is a full-time job. I'm already booking the lineup for next year. It's like three across the two festivals. I'm booking about 300 acts a year, and just that part of the job alone is like hugely time consuming, because you're not getting your first choice 300. You're having to sift through thousands of bands to get to your 300.
I'm sure.
So it's there used to be a downtime, but now it feels like that's kind of evaporated. And as soon as the summer finishes this year, straight back into budgeting and booking and getting it going again.
Funny you mentioned Bob Villain there. I feel like they're just constantly going up in their popularity. Are they headlining one of the days this year?
They're second from top on the Friday. They've gone from a pretty small band at 2000 Trees in the smallest tent. And within 3 years, they've played 3 years running. They're second from top of the main stage. And I really hope that one day that Bob Villain come back and headline the main stage. I love that sort of thing. It's like a British act that's come from small and worked their way up and played Trees a bunch of times, and to come back and headline would be really cool.
I assume they're making waves in America as well, because I think MDDN manages them now. So they're
So that's like Architects Management, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think they're really well. They've got a great career ahead of them, I think.
Who? So obviously you alluded to booking the headliners for next year. Who are some of those headliners that in the 17 years this festival's existed you haven't got yet? Who's kind of on your wish list still?
Well, if you'd asked me a year ago, I would have said Gaslight Anthem would have been in my top three or four. So I'm really happy that they're finally playing.
Yeah.
Alexis on Fire is a big one that we go after every year. And mm-hmm. I suspect that one year it will happen. If you look at a slightly bigger level of maybe it's unrealistic, I would love Deftones, love Biffy Clyro. I feel like those bands would be really amazing at Trees. Architects would be great. Bring Me the Horizon are too big now. I don't think that'll ever happen, but Architects is doable, I think. Sleep Token would be cool.
Oh, yeah. They're very popular these days. Yeah.
Weirdly, Sleep Token have played Arctangent way back when they were a little band. And now they're selling arenas out in a day. Their sales are wild. I mean, it's just unbelievable. There's a bunch. We're not trying to aggressively grow 2000 Trees. It gets slightly bigger each year because more people want to come, and it's very expensive to put these festivals on. But We've got a wish list, but for next year, Alexis on Fire. That's my, I really would love that to happen.
Okay, fingers crossed for you. What's your favourite Gaslight album, just on the subject of them?
Well, you have to go 59 Sound, I think, because that's a really boring answer. I do like their new album, though. So, yeah, new album's cool, but 59 Sound always. Are you a Gaslight fan?
Yeah, definitely. Handwritten might be my favourite little hot take on that one.
Amazing.
I don't know. It's difficult not to pick 59 Sound, though.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Gaslight, amazing. But I think Brian Fallon's just such a good songwriter. I love his solo stuff. Maybe as much, if not more, than Gaslight. I do think he's a
Amazing, I mean, I've tried to book him for Trees a bunch of times, so I'm hopeful one year he'll come and do a solo thing. I mean, it would be amazing if he'd do a forest set, like an acoustic forest set would be really great, but I'm going to guess he's probably not going
to
do it.
What have you been listening to recently? What music have you been impressed with?
Well, from last year, the album, that if I was going to go from a 2000 Trees angle, I think...
Okay, that makes sense.
The Creeper album from last year is just wildly amazing. Why are that band not selling out arenas? It's not even the sort of music that I normally listen to, but they're so fucking great. It's like a... It's almost like Creeper does 80s metal with a bit of Meatloaf. It's just like...
Yeah.
But that makes it sound shit, but it's not. It's amazing. The songs are so strong. The way they pull it off is so believable. So the Creeper album from last year, I love. From this year, I really love the new Thom Yorke album by his new band, The Smile. Well, it's their second album. That's really cool. There's a band called Slift who are playing Arctangent, and they're like, it's kind of like psychedelic doom. It's pretty out there. Some of your listeners may not like it, but go and check them out, Slift. The album's amazing.
Slift, okay.
Really, really, really great. And the other one that's probably my album of this year so far is Eshawn, who is he's the front man from the black metal band Emperor, but his solo stuff is way more like melodic and progressive, but this album's bonkers. It's got orchestra on it. It's really over the top and mad. So basically, I guess I feel like I'm talking to more than one audience, but if you're a 2000 Trees fan, 2000 Trees, check out Unpeople and Creeper. If you want to expand your mind, then Slift and Eshawn are just like amazing. Yeah.
I think it's cool. Like Will, is it Gold? I forget his surname.
Yeah.
He's really built something with Creeper. I remember his Our Time Down Here days, like playing with that band back in the day. And it's he's grafted and really built something.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
And like I said, when I say it's so believable, I just feel like they've gone, right, this is what we should try and do. And they pull it off 100%. It doesn't sound like a band trying to do something. It sounds like a band actually doing it. And on the last album, there was like bits of like Britpop and Bowie. And this is like, this album's like Meatloaf and Judas Priest almost. And it's just like, they pull it off. And ultimately, the strength of Creeper's songs, I think, is the thing that shines above everything, because it's like banger after banger after banger. I really just think they're amazing.
Were you posting about if they got a hot sauce or something?
So my podcast is sponsored by Lou's Brews, who do like rock and heavy metal hot sauces.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's like you can buy some merchandise, which has got, like, so you could buy an Arctangent one, you could buy a 2000 Trees one. They're currently in production. There is a Creeper one, there's a Bring Me the, so Creeper have done four. There's like a set of four, which I bought. They're really nice. Bring Me the Horizon did it. I'm guessing that's sold out now. But if you're a rock fan and you like hot sauce, and you're also, because I'm well into my merch, like I bought this cat piece today. I get very excited about merch. So this is an Imperial Triumphant hat. I just get excited about like band t-shirts, band hats, vinyl. Yeah. Yeah. I'm a geek like that. And then he's like, well, I've done hot sauces. And I'm like, okay, I'm in. Give me your four Creeper hot sauces. Somehow they taste nicer just because the bottles are nice.
Do you get to many other festivals just to go kind of as a punter, to kind of enjoy just being there, because I remember being at yours when we're in the press camping area, and like pitch next to us was someone who works quite high up at Slam Dunk, and she was just like, it's just nice to be here, and you know, just in obviously yeah. similar kind of music, and just enjoy it. Do you get to do that kind of thing much?
Yeah, I do. I've never been to Slam Dunk, and the reason is,
oh, really?
it's such a bad timing for me. So right. particularly now, I'm like, I'm a dad as well.
Yeah.
I'm away a lot in the summer with 2000 Trees and Arctangent. And so any festivals that fall before or during the summer, like yeah. I'd like to go to Slam Dunk, but we're almost right, because we start the 2000 Trees build just after Slam Dunk.
Yeah.
So I usually only end up making it to just download before the summer. But I like winter festivals because I'm more relaxed. So I love Damnation. I love Roadburn Festival in Holland. I spend a lot of my time having a go about Live Nation, but I do really love Download. Like it.
Yeah.
I do buy the idea that it's the home of rock. The Donington Monsters of Rock was my first festival when I was 15 years old in like 1995 or six. And it does mean that like the hallowed ground of Donington. I don't think that's a sales pitch. I actually think it's true. So although you don't often hear me say nice things publicly about it, I go to Download every year. And, you know, seeing Metallica there last year was just so fucking amazing. I do go to festivals, but not as many as I, somewhere between fatherhood and just being away all summer.
That makes sense.
I can't get to as many as I want to.
You didn't catch our friends in Elvana at Download by any chance, did you?
No, I didn't. Was it good?
They're just like old, old friends of ours who I don't know if you're familiar with Elvana.
I am, but,
yeah. It's the most ridiculous thing ever, but they're growing and growing, and it's just, I love to see that happen, and Download seems to love them as well. So.
Yeah, it's a pretty mad story, that, isn't it? It's just, it's really taken off, because they had a good slot as well, I think.
Yeah.
For Download.
Mate, it's mad. I remember they started it about a decade ago, and I remember them just telling me like, "Oh, we're just because they were an existing band prior to that." And it's like, "Oh, for a laugh, we're gonna do like Nirvana songs, but Paul's gonna be Elvis." And I just remember thinking, "That's the worst idea I've ever heard." But hey, you know, I'm happy to admit it when I was wrong. You know?
Amazing.
Yeah. James, I think I've taken quite a bit of your time, so I think we can probably wrap things up there. But massively appreciate you wasting time podcast some of your time this afternoon.
My pleasure, my pleasure.
Yeah,
let's make sure we grab a beer in a field this summer at 2000 Trees. So that'd be good.
Yeah, sounds good. I mean, we're certainly hoping to be planning to be there, so that would be awesome.
Amazing. Yeah, let's do that.